A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin, we've talked about ways to secure self-hosted resources before, and self-hosted in this context can mean things that are literally hosted at your where you live, which traditionally has been kind of a nerve-wracking endeavor, fraught with concerns about exposing ports on your server and Russian cyber criminals getting to your home assistant and turning off the lights or something much more nefarious. But Cloudflare has really changed the game in terms of allowing people to create services that are physically hosted at home or stuff like Home Assistant and provide a way to tunnel into it securely without exposing ports. Another really popular one is Tailscale. And I have to say that when learning these technologies for the first time a few years back, after finally getting my head around Cloudflare, which does take a lot of time to understand, the more powerful something is, the more complicated it is. And Cloudflare is one of those products where when you start getting into tunnels and routing and reverse proxying, suddenly there is a lot to pick through. But eventually, I kind of got that down-ish and then started... At that point, Tailscale was kind of, well, okay, Cloudflare is working now, so why do I need Tailscale as well? And it took a while for me to actually see how these coexist and why they're really useful. I'd like to talk about how to actually make the most use of Tailscale if you've done the hard work of setting up a Tailnet and adding your devices. I know there is a self-hosted version, which I'd like to get into as well. But because I'd like to firstly talk about the things you can do, which are mostly, there's a lot of similarity here. I think we should talk about just these things before. Maybe we can park how to self-host a VPN or a software-defined network at a later point in time. Here are the couple of things that I know you can do, and which I wonder if you could just share a little bit about how to do them. The first one is that if you want to use your home IP, you can set up an exit node, if I'm not mistaken. Now, I guess that I'm not the only one when you're doing stuff with Tailscale. Every step here is fraught with the concern, what if I mess this up somehow? And I'm going to expose my network. So really what I'm asking is, how do you do that safely? If you want your traffic to flow from your laptop through your home network and out, and I can actually think of some really legitimate uses for this. I mentioned that in Israel, a lot of sites are geo-restricted, or you might have authentication that is based around your home IP. And if you're not at home, you could tunnel through your home. And that's kind of a wild proposition to me still. I mean, does it literally mean your web traffic is flowing through your house, even if you're on the other side of the world? Because that's pretty wild when you think about it. And the other one that I know is useful or can be used is everything on the Tailnet gets its own shorthand. Now, here's what I've been thinking about setting up a couple of deployment workflows. Let's say I'm creating a workflow for deploying something onto a self-hosted resource. I was doing this just today, and I was writing an agent skill, which we covered, and trying to think, should I write something complex like, if you're at home, use this local IP, and if you're not at home, you should use this method to deploy. And then I thought, wait a second, why can't I just write down in the skill, use the Tailnet point, because assuming my client is connected, that's always going to be the same. Now, my concern and what I was wondering about was hairpinning. We see this with Cloudflare as well, that when you're trying to not get involved in too much complication, if you want to have a stable address, whether it's an MCP gateway or something you self-host, you don't want to go out to the internet just to come back to a computer that is physically located 5 meters away. It makes absolutely zero sense, not just from a latency standpoint, from an anything standpoint. And avoiding hairpinning with Cloudflare, if I recall, you actually have to then set up stuff at the router, which again gets you into this world of why did I get involved in all this stuff? My question is, I've heard that tail nets have something that actually intelligently routes, which would be the ideal to me. In other words, if it knows I'm on the tail net and this is the address also on the tail net, but wait a second, these are on the same physical local network, we can just hop across the network instead of going out. Does Tailscale have that? And finally, yes, I've thrown a lot of questions into one here. If you wanted to just go fully Tailscale, by which I mean you want to have a resource, you don't want to have to remember a funny DNS like Daniel's Home Assistant 2731.tailscale.com or whatever. You wanted to just use a classic DNS like danielsmarthome.com. And that's where I haven't found, that's where I find I need to use both Cloudflare and Tailscale. Is there any way to actually do all of that stuff just using Tailscale and figuring out the DNS magic required for it? Over to you.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's a meaty one. He's been neck deep in self-hosted infrastructure, Cloudflare tunnels, Tailscale, the whole stack. And he's hit that point a lot of us hit where you've got everything working, but you're not quite sure how these tools fit together, or whether you're one misconfiguration away from inviting every cyber criminal in Russia to your smart lights. His core questions are threefold. 1. How do you safely use a Tailscale exit node to route traffic through your home? P. When you're away?
They're good ones, because this is exactly where people get stuck. They set up the tailnet, they add their devices, and then they stare at it thinking, okay, now what do I actually do with this? There's a gap between installation and utility that the documentation doesn't always bridge well.
By the way, today's episode is powered by DeepSeek V4 Pro.
And I think what's underneath all three of them is that tension between power and paranoia. You've got these incredibly capable tools now, but every new feature you enable also feels like you're opening a door you might forget to close.
Let's start with exit nodes, because Daniel's framing of this is exactly right. He's asking, how do you do it safely, and does your traffic really flow through your house from the other side of the world? The short answer to that second question is, yes, it absolutely does. Right, and I think that philosophical difference is what takes a while to sink in. When you've spent years thinking in terms of firewalls and exposed ports and NAT traversal, the Tailscale model of everything just talks to everything else over WireGuard feels almost too good to be true.
The wild thing is how seamless it is. You toggle it on in the Tailscale client, and suddenly your public IP is your home IP NoV. PN configuration files, no manual routing tables, no open VPN profiles you have to email to yourself. It is healthy. Let's start with exit nodes, because that's the one that feels the most like magic.
Right, because the fear is, if I set this up wrong, am I punching a hole in my network that some Russian cybercriminal is going to crawl through?
His question is, does that literally mean all his web traffic is flowing through his house? When you designate a machine as an exit node, what you're doing is telling Tailscale that this device is authorized to forward traffic from other devices on your tailnet out to the internet. The key word there is authorized. Only devices that are already authenticated members of your tailnet can use it. It's not a public gateway. It's not listening on an exposed port. The control plane handles all of the coordination, and the traffic between your laptop and the exit node is encrypted via WireGuard.
The attack surfaces. Someone would need to first compromise your tailnet itself. They need to get a device authenticated onto your network. At that point, whether you have an exit node or not, you've got bigger problems.
First, the exit node device itself. You want something reasonably capable and ideally dedicated to that role, or at least not your primary workstation where you're installing random software. A Raspberry Pi 4 or 5 works beautifully. Something always on, low power, that you're not messing with constantly.
Not the machine where you're also testing out that sketchy Python library you found on GitHub at 2A. Don't pick the Raspberry Pi 3 that's already struggling to run Home Assistant in Pi-hole. Pick something with a little headroom. The encryption and decryption isn't computationally trivial, especially if you're routing a lot of traffic through it.
There is no listening port on your home router. There's nothing for a port scanner to find. I'd recommend using a small, always-on device. Could be a Raspberry Pi 4 or 5, could be an old Intel NUC, could be a dedicated VM on a home server, something that you know will be awake and connected.
TailScale's model is, the devices inside your network reach out, establish encrypted tunnels, and then traffic flows through those tunnels. The firewall stays closed. It's completely inverted. With port forwarding, you're advertising a service to the entire internet. With TailScale, the only devices that can even attempt to connect are devices that have been authenticated to your tailnet.
It's more common than people realize. You've got banking sites that flag logins from unexpected locations. You've got streaming services with regional licensing. You've got internal work tools that are IP whitelisted. The safety checklist for an exit node is really about what happens to the traffic once it's on your home device, not about the tunnel itself. If someone compromises your laptop and your laptop is connected to the exit node, they can route through your home, but that's true of any VPN.
There's also a use case Daniel didn't mention, but that I think is worth flagging. If you're on public Wi-Fi, airport, hotel, cafe, routing through your exit node means all of your traffic is encrypted between your device and your home network. The public Wi-Fi operator sees nothing but encrypted WireGuard packets. They can't inspect your DNS queries. They can't inject ads. They can't track what sites you're visiting.
That's a big one. Public Wi-Fi is a surveillance swamp, and an exit node is a clean way to tunnel through it without paying for a commercial VPN service that you may or may not trust. You're your own VPN provider, essentially.
Let's talk about how to actually set this up safely, step by step, because Daniel asked for that specifically. Step 1. Install TailScale on the machine you want to be your exit node. Same process as any other device. Download the client. Authenticate. It joins your tailnet. Step 2. You need to advertise the exit node capability. This is a deliberate step. You don't just toggle something in the GUIE. You run a command on the device.
The approval step is the safety gate. You can't accidentally turn something into an exit node just by running a command. You haven't actually enabled anything yet.
Advertise routes lets you expose specific subnets. So if you want devices on your tailnet to reach your home printer at 192.250 without routing all their web browsing through your house, you'd use subnet routing instead. Daniel's use case, geo-restricted sites, IP-based authentication, that's classic exit node territory. But if someone just wants to access local services without exposing their whole internet traffic, subnet routing is the lighter touch. That's three deliberate actions. Advertise, approve in console, select on client. You can't accidentally expose anything.
With OpenVPN, if you misconfigure firewall rules, you can absolutely expose your internal network. With TailScale, the worst misconfigurations are about access control. You might accidentally let someone on your tailnet access a device they shouldn't, or route your traffic through an exit node without realizing it.
One thing I'd add, and this is more of a network hygiene point, if you're going to run an exit node, make sure the machine itself is reasonably secured. Keep it updated. Don't run a bunch of random services on it. The anxiety is understandable, but the actual risk surface is much smaller than people fear. All right, let's move to Daniel's second question, hairpinning and local routing.
That's good advice. And I'd also say, don't make your primary workstation your exit node. It's tempting because it's always on and it's powerful, but your workstation is where you open attachments, click links, install software. It's the device most likely to encounter something nasty. Use a dedicated device or a server that isn't used for day-to-day browsing.
To answer Daniel's first question directly, yes, your traffic literally flows through your house from anywhere in the world. Yes, it's safe if you follow the three-step approval process. And no, you're not exposing ports or creating a public gateway. The risk surface is your tailnet authentication, which you already need to trust.
Let's talk about performance, because that's the natural follow-up. What's the latency like? If you're in Tokyo and your exit node is in Jerusalem, you're adding roughly 200 to 300 milliseconds of round-trip time. If your router doesn't support NAT loopback, or if the devices are on different VLANs with restrictive firewall rules between them, TailScale might fall back to using a derp relay server.
If you're in the same country, maybe a city or two away, the overhead is often under 20 milliseconds. You genuinely won't feel it. And if you're on the same local network, TailScale is smart enough to route directly, which actually brings us to Daniel's second question about hairpinning.
If they discover they share a local network, they'll establish the WireGuard tunnel over that local path. The latency difference is dramatic, sub-millisecond versus potentially hundreds of milliseconds through a relay. Daniel's asking, if he's at home on his laptop and he's trying to reach a service on his home server and he's using the tailnet address, does the traffic go out to the internet and come back, or does it stay local?
The answer is, Tailscale uses something called direct peer-to-peer connections. When two devices on your tailnet need to communicate, Tailscale's coordination server, they call it the control plane, helps them establish a direct WireGuard tunnel between each other. For Daniel's agent skill scenario, he's absolutely right that using the tailnet address is the clean approach. Instead of conditional logic, if at home use 192.250, else use the tailnet address. You just always use the tailnet address.
Here's the key part for the hairpinning question. Tailscale doesn't just blindly route everything through some central relay. It probes to see if a direct connection is possible. This sidesteps the Cloudflare hairpinning issue Daniel mentioned. With Cloudflare tunnels, if you access your domain from inside your home network, your traffic goes out to Cloudflare's edge and comes back unless you've set up split horizon DNSS. That's exactly the kind of configuration complexity Daniel's trying to avoid. Tailscale avoids it entirely because it's peer-to-peer by design, not hub-and-spoke through a central proxy.
What about magic DNS lookup latency? If he's using a tailnet address that resolves to 100, whatever, is there a penalty? If they're behind the same NAT, which is what a home network is, the path is direct. Zero additional latency beyond whatever your local network already has.
Resolution itself adds negligible latency. The actual connection then either goes direct over the local network or through the WireGuard tunnel, as we discussed. If both devices are behind restrictive NATs that won't allow a direct peer-to-peer connection, the traffic relays through a DERP server. We need to be precise about what he's trying to achieve.
And this is the important but. DERP is the fallback, not the default. Tailscale will always try direct first, and on a home network, direct will succeed essentially 100% of the time. So Daniel's concern about hairpinning is valid in theory, but Tailscale's architecture is designed specifically to avoid it.
I've tested this. I've got a server running on my home network, and when I'm on the same network and I SSH to it using the tailnet address, the latency is sub-millisecond. It's indistinguishable from using the local IP address. Tailscale Serve lets you expose a web service with a nice local address and automatic HTTPS.
For Daniel's deployment workflow question, should he use the tailnet address in his agent skill instead of conditional logic based on whether he's at home? The answer is yes, absolutely. The tailnet address is stable. It works from anywhere, and when he's at home, it routes locally. He doesn't need the if at home use local. IP logic. He can just use the tailnet address, and it'll always take the optimal path.
That's the real operational win of Tailscale. You stop thinking about network topology. You don't need to know whether you're on the same subnet or behind a NAT or connected via VPN. Every device on your tailnet has a stable IP address in the 100.64.0.0/10 range. That's the SIGNAT range Tailscale uses, and that address is the same whether you're at home, at a coffee shop, or on another continent. Your scripts and configurations don't need to change based on location.
There's a subtlety here worth mentioning. The 100.64 address is the tailnet IP, and that's what you'd use for service-to-service communication within the tailnet. But Tailscale also gives you a D, NSS. Name for each device. It's usually hostname.tailnet, name.tees.net. That resolves to the tailnet IP, so you can use either the IP or the D, NSS name in your configurations, and both will route optimally.
I-based updates with tools like Lego or Certbot plugins. But now, you're adding moving parts. You just use the hostname. And Magic DNS handles resolution, so even when you're using the DNSS name, the traffic still takes the direct peer-to-peer path when possible.
This is honestly where the Cloudflare plus Tailscale combination. Daniel's already using starts to look pretty reasonable. Cloudflare handles public DNS, certificates, and reverse proxy.
The honest answer is, it depends on what exactly you're trying to do, and there's a spectrum of approaches. Let me break it down. The simplest case is, you want a custom domain that only you and people on your tailnet can access. I do want to mention Tailscale Funnel because it's Tailscale's answer to, what if I want to expose a service publicly without Cloudflare? You run Tailscale Funnel on the device, specify the port, and Tailscale gives you a public URL, hostname.net, that routes through Tailscale's ingress servers to your device. No ports to open, no Cloudflare tunnel to configure. It handles TLS termination at Tailscale's edge. It's designed for development and low-traffic scenarios, sharing a dev server with a colleague, exposing a Home Assistant dashboard temporarily. But again, that's the tease.net domain, not a custom domain. Funnel gives you dead simple public exposure with zero infrastructure to manage, but you don't get your own domain. If you want DanielSmartHome.com publicly accessible, you're looking at either Cloudflare tunnels or a reverse proxy on a VPS.
There's a middle ground worth exploring. Could you point Cloudflare DNS at a Tailnet IP address?
That doesn't work because Tailnet IPs, those 100.x addresses, are not publicly routable. But here's what does work. You run a Cloudflare tunnel that connects to your Tailnet address. The Cloudflare daemon runs on a device that's also on your Tailnet, and instead of pointing it at localhost, you point it at the Tailnet address of your service. Cloudflare handles the public DNS.
If the service is only accessible via Tailscale, a public DNS record pointing to a Tailnet, IP is useless to anyone not on the Tailnet. The 100.64 address isn't publicly routable.
Your service could be on a different device than the one running Cloudflare. They communicate over the Tailnet. That gives you architectural flexibility. You can move services between devices without updating your Cloudflare configuration. Option 2. You use Tailscale Funnel, which is a feature that lets you expose a service on your Tailnet to the public internet through Tailscale's infrastructure. Headscale is an open-source implementation of the Tailscale coordination server. Instead of your devices authenticating to Tailscale servers, they authenticate to a coordination server you run yourself. The Tailscale clients on your devices are the same. They just point at your Headscale server instead. This gives you full control over the coordination layer. Tailscale never sees your device metadata, ACLs, or network topology. What do you lose? Tailscale Funnel, because Funnel depends on Tailscale's ingress infrastructure. Magic DNS integration with public certificates, you need to handle that yourself. The DERP relay network, though you can run your own DERP servers, and you take on the operational burden of maintaining the coordination server. For most individuals, Tailscale's free tier is more than sufficient, and the trade-offs of Headscale aren't worth it.
The short answer is, if you want a fully private setup where your custom domain only works for Tailnet members, you can do that entirely within Tailscale using SplitD, NS and an internal D, NSS server. No Cloudflare required. Daniel's been running Nynene for 18 months and considers it the closest self-hosted Zapier replacement. He's clearly comfortable with self-hosting. Headscale might be in his future.
I think that's actually a reasonable architecture. There's nothing wrong with using both Cloudflare and Tailscale. They solve different problems. Cloudflare handles public-facing traffic, DDoS protection, caching, all the edge stuff. Let's circle back to something Daniel said that's worth pulling on. He landed on, just use the Tailnet address for his agent skill. There's a broader principle here about how Tailnets change the way you think about addressing.
Daniel mentioned that he finds himself needing both, and I think that's not a failure of understanding. It's actually the correct design for a lot of setups. The question is whether you can reduce the Cloudflare dependency if you want to, and the answer is, for internal-only services, yes. For anything public, you probably still want something sitting at the edge.
That stability is what makes it viable for agent skills or MCP gateway configurations. You write the config once, it works everywhere. So let's say you do have DanielSmartHome.com pointed at Cloudflare for the general public. But for devices on your Tailnet, you want that domain to resolve directly to the Tailnet IP. So you get the direct peer-to-peer path and avoid hairpinning through Cloudflare. You can do that. You configure split DNS to say, for DanielSmartHome.com, use my internal DNS server, your internal DNS. I want to get concrete about exit node use cases beyond geo-restricted sites. Accessing streaming services while traveling. If you're abroad and your Netflix library is different, an exit node at home gives you your home library.
That's actually the answer to Daniel's hairpinning concern about Cloudflare. He mentioned that avoiding hairpinning with Cloudflare requires router-level configuration. With Tailscale's split DNS, you don't need to touch the router. You just configure the DNS override in the admin console, and Tailnet members automatically get the local route.
This is why I think Tailscale's approach to DNS is one of its most underrated features. Magic DNS plus Split DNS gives you a level of control over name resolution that would normally require running your own DNS. Infrastructure with conditional forwarding rules and split horizon configurations. Tailscale makes it a few clicks in the admin console.
Let's talk about the self-hosted question briefly, because Daniel mentioned he'd like to park the full self-hosted discussion for later. But it's worth noting that Tailscale offers something called Headscale, which is an open-source re-implementation of the Tailscale control plane. With Headscale, you run the coordination server yourself. You're not relying on Tailscale's infrastructure at all.
Right, and Headscale is a great project. It's maintained by a developer named Juan Font and a community of contributors. Tailscale is remarkably simple to get started with. Install the client, log in, and your devices are connected. The complexity comes when you start doing the things Daniel's asking about: exit nodes, custom DNS, ACLs, funnel, serve. But even then, the complexity is in the configuration options, not in the underlying networking concepts. You don't need to understand WireGuard, NAT traversal, or DERP relays to use Tailscale effectively. The abstractions hold.
The trade-off is operational complexity. You're now responsible for the availability and security of the coordination server. If it goes down, your tailnet can't establish new connections. Existing connections continue to work because they're peer-to-peer, but you can't add devices or re-authenticate. So you need to think about redundancy, backups, monitoring.
You lose some of the nice things Tailscale's hosted control plane provides. The admin console, UIV, automatic ACL management, the integration with identity providers. With Headscale, you're managing ACLs as JSON configuration files. It's not impossible, but it's more work. For most home users, the hosted Tailscale is free for up to 3 users and 100 devices, which is more than enough. Headscale makes sense if you have a philosophical commitment to self-hosting everything, or if you have compliance requirements that prevent you from using a third-party control plane.
Or if you're just the kind of person who enjoys running infrastructure, which, given that Daniel is asking about deploying agent skills to self-hosted resources, he might be that kind of person.
You can say, devices with tag, server can access port 443 on devices with tag database. It's infrastructure, as code for your personal network. And because it's a single source of truth in the admin console, you're not wondering whether you remembered to update the firewall on that one device you set up 6 months ago.
Let's go back to Daniel's custom domain question. He wants danielsmarthome.com for his home assistant. He's currently using Cloudflare for DNS and tunnel, and Tailscale for the device mesh. Is there a way to simplify that stack? And I think that anxiety is real and valid, but it's worth naming explicitly. Tailscale's design philosophy is that you shouldn't have to think about network security at the port and firewall level. The security boundary is identity. You authenticate a device. You define ACLs that say what that device can access. You don't open ports. You don't configure firewall rules. You don't worry about whether you accidentally expose port 22 to the internet because you misconfigured a Docker container.
Cloudflare handles certificate renewal automatically. Tailscale handles the tunnel connectivity. You just need to keep the Cloudflare daemon running and up to date. Run it in a Docker container with Watchtower and essentially forget about it. But you can lock that down. You can say, my laptop can access my home server on port 443, and my phone can access nothing except the exit node, and my IoT devices can only talk to the MQTT broker on port 1883. And these rules are enforced at the node level, so even if someone compromises a device, they can't use it to pivot to other things on your tailnet beyond what the ACLs allow.
No port number. Automatic HTTPS. Serve handles the port mapping and TLS termination on the device. It supports WebSockets, which is important for Home Assistant's real-time updates and gRPC. You can configure it to serve multiple ports from the same device. Port 8123 for Home Assistant, port 3000 for Grafana, all accessible under different subpaths of your tailnet name, all with valid HTTPS. Certificates that browsers trust, which eliminates the self-signed certificate warnings that make self-hosted services feel janky. That's a quality of life improvement that matters more than people admit.
You can also use tags to group devices and write ACLs that reference those tags. I want to pivot slightly to the broader trend here. Daniel's questions reflect something happening across the self-hosting community. The tooling has matured to the point where individuals can run production-quality infrastructure at home. Tailscale, Cloudflare Tunnels, Docker, ADN. These aren't toys. They're the same building blocks companies use.
I want to emphasize something Herman said earlier that might have gone by quickly. The default ACL in Tailscale is permissive. Every device can talk to every other device. For a home user with 5 or 6 devices they trust, that's probably fine. But if you're the kind of person who's worried about exposure, changing that default to a denial and then explicitly allowing what you need is a 15-minute exercise that gives you a lot of peace of mind.
Tailscale has a feature called ACL tests that lets you validate your rules before applying them. You can write a test that says, device A should be able to reach device B on port 443. Device C should not be able to reach device B at all. Run the test, see if it passes, then apply. It's a safety net.
PN. You turn on when you're away. Keep it connected all the time. Use tailnet addresses as the canonical addresses for your services. Build your automation and deployment workflows around those addresses. Once you do that, your physical location stops mattering, and that's liberating. The always-connected model is key. A lot of people treat Tailscale like a traditional VPN. Connect when you need it, disconnect when you don't. But Tailscale is designed to be always on. The overhead is negligible. The battery impact on mobile devices is minimal, and the benefit is that your tailnet is always available.
The through line in all of this is that Tailscale changes the security model from network level to identity level. You stop thinking about IP addresses and ports and start thinking about devices and what they're allowed to do. Let's address one more thing from Daniel's prompt. He mentioned being in Israel and dealing with geo-restricted sites.
I think there's one more thing worth saying about the exit node use case, because Daniel framed it as kind of wild, the idea that your web traffic is flowing through your house from the other side of the world. And it is wild, but it's also increasingly normal. The boundary between local and remote has been dissolving for years. We've got people working from home accessing office resources, people traveling accessing home resources, services distributed across multiple physical locations. The idea that your network is a physical place is increasingly a fiction.
You're adding yourself. The trust boundary is you to your own device. That's it. The exit node is just the most dramatic illustration of that principle. Your laptop in Tokyo and your server in Jerusalem are on the same logical network. Of course, your traffic can flow through your house. They're in the same network.
Which is why, to Daniel's point about deployment workflows, using the tailnet address as the canonical address for services makes so much sense. The physical location stops mattering. You don't need conditional logic. You don't need to know where you are. You just connect to the tailnet address, and the network figures out the best path.
Third, explore Tailscale Serve for any internal web services you use regularly. Getting valid HTTPS on your tailnet addresses eliminates so much friction. They might look at your browser's language settings, your time zone, your GPS if you're on mobile. An exit node alone won't spoof all of those. So, if you're trying to access a service that's really determined to know where you are, you might need to think about those additional signals.
That's a good catch. The IP address is the biggest signal, but it's not the only one. On a phone, for example, many apps request location permissions and use that for geo-verification regardless of your IP. On a laptop, browser fingerprinting can reveal your time zone. If you're routing through Jerusalem but your system clock says Tokyo, that's a mismatch that some services will flag.
It's not a security problem, it's just a practical limitation. The exit node does exactly what it says. It routes your traffic. It doesn't virtualize your entire device environment. For most use cases, accessing your bank, streaming content, bypassing IP restrictions, it works fine. But if you run into something that still blocks you, check those other signals.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 18th century England, a profession known as a pure finder involved collecting dog excrement from the streets and selling it to tanneries, where it was used in the leather-making process to soften hides. The unintended consequence was that tanneries clustered in neighborhoods where pure finders operated, creating some of history's first industrial zoning patterns driven entirely by the availability of dog waste.
A supply chain I had not considered.
I need to sit with that one for a while.
To close out, I think the forward-looking question here is about how much further this abstraction can go. We've gone from physical networks to software-defined networks. We've gone from IP-based security to identity-based security. The next step, which is already happening, is that the network itself becomes invisible. You don't think about it at all. You just access your services, and the underlying mesh handles routing, encryption, authentication, and optimization. TailScale is pushing hard in that direction with things like TailScale Funnel and their Kubernetes operator.
I think the open question is whether that level of abstraction is actually desirable for home users. There's a point where the network becomes so invisible that you lose the ability to debug it when something goes wrong. If your connection to your home assistant is slow, is it a TailScale issue, a Wi-Fi issue, an ISP issue, a server load issue? The more layers of abstraction, the harder it is to know where to look. That's not an argument against TailScale. It's an argument for understanding enough about how it works to troubleshoot effectively.
Which is, fittingly, exactly what Daniel is doing by asking these questions. He's not just using the tools. He's trying to understand the routing decisions, the DNSS resolution, the security boundaries. That's the right posture. Use the abstraction, but know what's underneath it.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumentop for producing. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Until next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.